Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. live on most smartphones? Just go to the Listen Live page of our website, issuesetc.org, click the smartphone link, and you can listen on your smartphone weekday afternoons between 3 to 5 Central. Old Theology, New Technology, Issues Etc. now broadcasting live to the world on most smartphones. Issues Etc. issuesetc.org.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Monday afternoon, August the 16th. This is Issues Etc. coming to you live. We're going to spend the next half hour, answering questions about Christianity. Dr. James Emery White will join us. You can join us as well. Our call-in number 1-877-623-6943. You can email us right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, or send us a tweet at @issuesetc. Dr. James Emery White is past president and adjunct professor of theology and culture at Gordon-Conwell Theological Seminary. He's senior pastor of Mecklenburg Community Church in Charlotte, North Carolina, author of four booklets. What do we know about Jesus? Is Jesus the only way to God? Can we trust the Bible? And can we believe in God? Dr. White, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you, Todd. Thank you for having me.
Of the four questions that you answer there in these booklets, which, as a seminary professor and a pastor of a congregation, do you get asked the most?
Well, there are two answers for those two different constituencies, interestingly. I can tell you which of the four neither group asks, and that is about the existence of God. That was an important booklet to write, though, for this series, because it's become such a public issue with some very lately outspoken atheists bringing new charges. And so that was more for Christians and seminarians as well to kind of ground themselves on perhaps how to respond. But they themselves don't ask that question. I would say that the average person that I pastor who is dealing with some of these questions, they're going to ask, is Jesus really the only way? That really is one of the big questions, and they wrestle with whether good people will go to hell, and how does judgment work that way, and what of those who have never heard, and is Gandhi in heaven? These are very common questions, and they're driven by well-intentioned people who have a heart for friends that they know that they consider virtuous or moral, but may not be Christian. And then they have some, probably of late, some believing the Bible historicity of Jesus questions, historicity largely through Bart Ehrman and the Da Vinci Code with Dan Brown, believing the Bible just because it's generally in our culture so beat up. But I think the one that is closest to their heart is one way, their head, the Bible, and probably historicity of Jesus.
Let's deal with the one that you didn't often have to answer, and that is the existence of God. There is a rich and very long history of Christians, both theologically and philosophically, talking about the existence of God. How would you trace it for us?
Well, you're right. In fact, it's probably one of the richest veins of just basic philosophical history to chase, whether someone believes in God or not. And, I mean, you can find this argument going all the way back to the Greek philosophers and Plato and such. In fact, some of those arguments go back to that. The most ancient arguments tend to be ones that still work for this day or are still very vital to this day, such as the law of the cosmological argument, sometimes called the law of cause and effect. And that is very simply, if something got started, it had a beginning, then there must have had something that got it started. It's a very simple idea. You know, if you see a row of dominoes falling over, you know that somewhere, somehow, the first domino got pushed. And that's a very powerful argument for the existence of God, particularly in light of recent cosmological discoveries related to the Big Bang, which point to some kind of creation event. And if that is the case, two very important questions get raised. Where did the stuff for the bang come from, and who made it bang? And so these questions are very important, very ancient ones, as well as design and order, the design of the universe. That goes all the way back to the Greek idea of the word telos, which means purpose or design. And in fact, it was first articulated by Plato. So these are very ancient arguments that are still quite compelling today.
Let's talk a little bit about, you've raised several names here, Bart Ehrman and others, and the new atheist movement. They are raising all sorts of objections to Christianity, some of them really kind of facetious, if you ask me. But they go on the assumption that Christianity is just kind of this personal hunch. The Christian faith is more or less a personal hunch that people have without really any thought put into it. And they claim the intellectual high ground. They also claim that the arguments and all of the evidence points in their direction. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, Hitchens and Harris and others very much make those kind of ad hominem arguments, and I think you're absolutely correct on that. Ehrman actually is a little bit more disingenuous, I think, in his efforts, because he wants to use the Bible to disprove the Bible, try to use Christian history to disprove orthodoxy. And so he is a little bit more informed, shall we say, and yet distorts many of the facts that he attempts to put forward as if that's the final word of scholarship when it's not. It really comes down to this. It's very easy to set up in terms of like the new atheists, it's very easy to set up a straw man and tear that one down without really looking hard and fast at the evidence. And that's what makes it so fascinating, because in with the whole new atheist argument, you have some people who have been atheists their whole life who are coming to belief in theism because of the evidence. And so we really have to be a little bit careful in reading some of these books, because they pretend or portend to be the best in scholarship and the latest in thinking, and that there really isn't another view that is tenable, and it's simply not true. Very few scholars actually would hold to a lot of what Bart Ehrman says as being absolutely the last word on it. In fact, some of the leading Christian scholars who are excellent in their field find him moving pretty fast and loose with the evidence. Same with many of the new atheists. They really beat up on churchianity and religion without really engaging the more meaty reasons for actually believing in a God on the loose.
Ehrman says that, look, if you go back to the original the extant original manuscripts that we have, there are so many variants in those original manuscripts, and he deals with mostly the New Testament. So many variants, so many different ways that the text comes out when it's copied so many times. The text we have today cannot and is not reliable, probably bears no resemblance to the originals if they ever were in the form that they are today. How do you respond?
Absolutely false. The most documented ancient manuscript that we have in Western civilization is the Bible. For example, there are probably 8 or 10 good manuscripts of Caesar's Gallic Wars, 8 or 10 good manuscripts of Plato's writings. There are over 5,000 handwritten manuscripts in the Greek language alone in support of the New Testament. And many of the earliest copies are separated from the originals not by 1,000 years or more like most ancient manuscripts, but sometimes as much as just 50, 60 years. And if you buy into the famed Magdalen papyrus related to Matthew, within 25 to 50 years. And so this is really just not true. And many times, and this is really interesting about many of the arguments, they'll say things like the four Gospels contradict each other. They'll try to, play that way. In fact, Ehrman's latest book and others like it have gone at this route. And they'll say things like, look at Mark, and it's all about the agony of Jesus at the cross. You look at John, and it's all about recording Jesus' concern for his mother. Okay, contradiction, because in one it's all about agony, it's all about concern for his mother. Which one is right? And so there you have a contradiction. Well, it doesn't take a particularly swift person to say, couldn't Jesus have been in agony and concerned about his mother? That's not a contradiction. That's a difference in narrative emphasis, which is what you have in all the Gospels, which is one of the reasons why they are so compelling. Any lawyer will tell you that if you have multiple eyewitness accounts that have absolutely no variation in narrative emphasis, then you have collusion. The four got together and got their story straight. The kind of variations within the four Gospels are the kind you would expect to have if you really do have four different eyewitness accounts, but there aren't any contradictions. I mean, another one they throw out all the time, we're told that Peter will deny Christ before the cock crows, and Mark, we're told that Peter will deny Christ before the cock crows twice. They'll say, see, contradiction. Well, no, Peter was to deny Christ before the cock crowed. Mark simply supplied an added detail that it was going to be before he crowed twice. That's not a contradiction. And these are the kinds of things that are thrown around that can sound persuasive to some at first, but when you really look at it, it's extremely weak and is not a contradiction at all.
Others like Elaine Pagels, she writes a lot of books too. She says, you're simply not counting all the right gospels. The Gospel of Thomas, she says, should probably be more seen as more representative of Christ and early Christianity than the four gospels. We've got about a minute before this break. Begin a response.
Well, that would only be true if they were indeed Gospels that were true to indeed Thomas, and Thomas really did write it, perhaps, and was circulated during that era. But these were Gnostic documents that didn't even appear till around 300 A.D. They were forgeries, and they were false, and that nobody dates them earlier than that. So that's a pretty bogus argument.
When we come back, more on that subject with Dr. James Emery White, past president and adjunct professor of theology and culture at Gordon-Conwell Theological Seminary. He's author of four booklets, What Do We Know About Jesus? Is Jesus the Only Way to God? Can We Trust in the Bible? And Can We Believe in God? It's Monday afternoon, August the 16th. We're coming to you live. Our call-in number, your questions and your comments, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, or send us a tweet at @issuesetc. About another 10 minutes with Dr. James Emery White, then Ken Samples of Reasons to Believe will join us. Ramadan began this month. It runs an entire month. Muslims celebrate it. They fast during the day. They feast at night. And it is intended to be, I guess, a season of repentance for them. Comes awfully early in the year this year. And as it has begun, we'll find out what it's all about with Ken Samples of Reasons to Believe in about 10 minutes here on Issues Etc. 1-877-623-6943. Talk back at issuesetc.org or send us a tweet at @issuesetc.
Wouldn't it be great if more of your fellow parishioners listened to Issues Etc.? Well, here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. The bulletin blurb is updated weekly, issuesetc.org. Stay connected, issuesetc.org.
Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues Etc.
A 30-year war in China.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
When China implemented its one-child policy in 1980, the government envisioned a time 30 years in the future when the policy would be relaxed. Their belief was that by 2010, China's booming population would be under control and limiting Chinese couples to one child would no longer be necessary. But the future is now, and Chinese officials show no signs of relenting on a policy that has forced abortion on millions of women. Second children must be aborted if parents cannot pay the fine equal to more than most families' annual income. Tune in for more next time.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're answering questions about Christianity. Dr. James Emery White is our guest. Dr. White, this one comes from Rick in Rockford, Illinois. He says, is today's atheism more about what they believe or merely reactionary as to what they reject. I don't hear much about what they affirm, mostly what they protest.
I think you're absolutely right. In fact, that's been a claim that is, or a challenge that's been put toward a lot of atheists, particularly some of the ones like Richard Dawkins, who have been, had to realize they need to respond with something. And so they've been trying to offer something a little more constructive, almost these atheistic gatherings where they have small groups and some kind of spiritual experience, but built around no content or dogma, which is another conversation that would be of interest. But, you know, I do believe that you do have an awful lot of individuals who reject Christianity because they have been burned, they've been hurt, they've seen hypocrisy, they lead a moral life that they do not want challenged, they don't want real spiritual leadership. I mean, there's so many different things where emotions or our own state of soul can drive us toward a theological opinion that affirms where we're going emotionally. I do believe there are atheists who have looked honestly at the data, and it's interesting to see what can happen. I mean, look at the famed conversion of Anthony Flew, the famous Oxford scholar, philosopher who wrote almost every essay in favor of atheism for college textbooks for decades, and then toward the end of his life, just recently, he converted to theism on the basis of the strength of the evidence for intelligent design. And so you do have individuals who do look at it through the facts, but a lot of them do look at it through the lens of their emotions.
Ken in Orlando, Florida emails us. He says, how do we reach the atheist who refuses to listen to historical evidence with respect to Christianity and will only believe in what can be proven, quote-unquote, scientifically?
Well, there's a couple of things that come to my mind with that. One is, I don't know that necessarily the best or only approach toward reaching out is simply to try to win someone intellectually or to argue them into the kingdom. I think we need to have reasons for our faith and to give a hope for that lies within us. But I do believe that most people are loved into the kingdom. Most people have their heart and their mind opened when they are met with radical love and someone who cares for them, yes, who patiently answers questions, but who really lives the life in front of them, and they're arrested by Jesus, and then the facts fall into place. But I would also challenge someone who is really wrestling with this, is that very few people, very few intellectuals in our world really want to reduce reality to what science can prove, to what you can just see, touch, taste, hear, or smell, the empirical method. Very few people really want to do that these days. That's more of an enlightenment position and not really one that is present for many people today. In fact, it doesn't even fit into the new physics. But even further, there's a lot of things that we know are true that cannot be scientifically proved. You can't bring Julius Caesar back. You can't repeat the assassination of Abraham Lincoln to prove it happened. You can't replay the beginning of the universe to see what actually took place. If it's beyond our five senses to tangibly examine, then you can't use something like science and the normal rules of proof to either prove or disprove. But just because you can't repeat something doesn't mean it isn't real. I mean, no one has ever seen love. We know it's real. No one has ever smelled freedom. It exists. What is available to explore are the reasons for believing in God. And do we have evidence that will help us move beyond a reasonable doubt? And that's fair territory.
Let's talk about kind of objections to, not so much to religion in general, but to Christianity per se. And that is, someone would say, look, Jesus was a fine man, obviously a fine man, great moral example, but he never claimed to be God.
Well, that's an interesting statement that you would have to just ask that person to back up, because the evidence certainly goes against it. I mean, it's all throughout all four independent, separate biographical accounts of the life of Jesus recorded in the New Testament. You certainly have accounts in Thallus, Suetonius, Josephus, and others where miracles attached to him and claims were made. It certainly was no doubt in the early church immediately after his resurrection of his claim to divinity. There's just not even a hint that that is true, and enormous evidence that it is not. And so to say that he never claimed to be anything more than a man or a prophet is simply made up. We have the actual evidence and record that says the exact opposite.
Does it fit the definition of intolerance to say that Jesus is the only way of salvation?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Todd. One of the things that I've often said and find it helpful, particularly in college audiences and such, tolerance has become such a universal virtue. It's almost become just sacred. And the fact of the matter is, we have not been careful with how we've talked about tolerance. You just can't say tolerance. You have to say what kind of tolerance. If you're talking about social tolerance, well, that just means you accept people relationally and love people and treat them with dignity. Well, obviously, we're supportive of that. Then there is legal tolerance, which is, yes, you have the right to believe that. We're not going to make it illegal for you to be a non-Christian. Well, you know, Christians are for that as well. What really Christians are talking about, and almost every faith is intellectual tolerance, which is the idea that all ideas are equally valid. Not that you simply have the right to hold to ideas. That's legal tolerance. Intellectual tolerance is that they're all equally valid. Well, nobody believes that. I mean, if I were to say to you, Todd, hey, I think the best way for you to operate your car is to put sand in the gas tank, you could accept me relationally and socially and give me the legal right to do that to my car, while at the same time saying, I think it's an absolutely ridiculous idea, and I do not think that's the best way to operate a car. Well, that's where most people are. So Christianity, as almost any ideology, political, religious, almost any ideology, is not intellectually tolerant. And so to say that Christians claiming that Christ is the way is not being intolerant in a broad way, it's just being intellectually intolerant in the sense that we're putting an idea out into the marketplace and making a stand for something as true.
Is it a sine qua non for Christianity that Jesus is the only way? Is it an indispensable assertion that Christianity can never compromise on?
Oh, absolutely. I really do believe that. Because Jesus himself said that. And so if you're going to be a Christ follower, if you're going to really believe that this person was God himself in human form, the second person of the Trinity who came to planet Earth, then what he spoke, what he said, what he taught is not just private knowledge. It's universal, and it's something that all of reality rests on. And Jesus himself made that claim that he was the way and the truth and the life, and that no one would come to the Father except through him. And so, yeah, it is scandalously particular. It is scandalous in our culture for that kind of statement to be made, and Jesus made it without blushing.
Do you think that it's a good apologetic approach for Christians when they discuss these things in the public square with skeptics, with unbelievers, to point out that Christianity is and not completely unique, but in some ways unique as a world religion in its historical claims? That is, it claims to be rooted in actual history, not some other event, not into the mind of a religious guru, but actual events comprise what it is Christians believe and confess.
Yeah, I do. I believe it's important to have it rooted in space and time and history and in fact, and I think that's terribly important, although a lot less important these days, Todd, than it used to be. Apologetics as a whole has changed radically or needs to change radically. We're so used to dealing with Enlightenment questions and giving Enlightenment answers, and quite frankly, we're not in an Enlightenment culture. And also, the other mistake we often make is that we raise questions that maybe, and then we give the answer, and it really sells well for Christians, and they like it, but they're not questions that people are asking. So we make the Acts 2 mistake as if we're really speaking to the God-fearing Jews of Jerusalem, when in truth we're in Acts 17. We're on Mars Hill, and the best apologetic is going back and giving explanation and then backing that explanation up, you know, good theology explaining the Christian message, and then backing that up with what is indeed a transformed life and an authentic life that has truly had its deepest needs intersected by Christ. So, you know, being able to say, here's 18 reasons why the tomb was empty, it can make Christians feel good, but nobody's asking that question. They're not asking, did Jesus rise from the dead? They're asking, so what if he did? Well, that's a whole other question, and one many Christians are flat-footed and responding to. And so all of the apologetics questions are in an Acts 17 matrix, a Mars Hill matrix, and it's a totally different approach to take. I mean, that could be a whole other conversation that we have, but since you raise it, I would say that all of apologetics is in a radical revolution right now as we speak.
Finally, with about 30 seconds, one of the most common objections that a Christian will hear, as from a Sam Harris or a Richard Dawkins, is that all religions on their net are work out badly. They're bad for us intellectually. They're bad for us societally. They led to the Crusades. They lead to terrorism. They lump Christianity together in with the worst of other religions. 30 seconds for a response.
That is such a distorted view of history. I don't even know where to begin. That nothing could be further from the truth in terms of the way it has actually played out. Christianity founded universities, ended infanticide, put to rest the mistreatment of women, orphanages, and so much more. I mean, the list is unbelievable. You would have to have the most skewed view of history possible to say that religion, but particularly Christianity, has been detrimental. It is revisionist history at its worst.
Dr. James Emery White is past president and adjunct professor of theology and culture at Gordon-Conwell Theological Seminary, senior pastor of Meckleburg Community Church in Charlotte, North Carolina, author of four booklets, What Do We Know About Jesus? Is Jesus the Only Way? Can We Trust the Bible? And Can We Believe in God? Dr. White, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you, Todd.
When we come back, we'll talk Ramadan, which began this month, with Ken Samples of Reasons to Believe.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. live on most smartphones? Just go to the Listen Live page of our website, issuesetc.org, click the smartphone link, and you can listen on your smartphone weekday afternoons between 3 to 5 Central. Old Theology, New Technology, Issues Etc. now broadcasting live to the world on most smartphones. Issues Etc. issuesetc.org.
These days, value affords me a new attitude. It lets me appreciate that I can start my day with more than a $6 cup of coffee, and that I officially have permission to skip dinner out to spend time talking with my family over casserole in. Concordia Publishing House offers Christian products that help me focus on what matters most. Visit any of the three Concordia bookstores downtown, in Kirkwood, and on the campus of Concordia Seminary in Clayton, or shop online at cph.org and find out what a new value attitude looks like in your life.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced Issues Etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. Unfortunately, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. It's available for your questions or comments 24/7. 618-223-8384.
Here are two new ways to stay connected to Issues Etc., Facebook and Twitter. You'll find photos of in-studio guests at facebook.com/issuesetc, and you'll find a list of upcoming topics and guests on Twitter at issuesetc. Social networking for the thinking Christian, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc. Connect with fellow Issues Etc. junkies today, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc.